Hello and welcome to the program. My name is Luke Hunt and this is another podcast for The Diplomat and the Beyond the Mekong program. With me this morning is Michael Martin from CSIS in Washington. And Michael is a policy expert. He's been an advisor to several American governments. And today it's all about Myanmar. Michael, welcome to the program. What is China up to? I think that's the burning question in this part of the world.
Well, I think a lot of people have that question. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at it this way. China has, for a long time, sought to make Burma, Myanmar, its neighbor, if not a full-out friendly country to the Chinese government, at least not an enemy or not a danger to its security.
Right.
And the instability that is occurring in the country is posing a number of different threats to China's interests, and so they are attempting to intervene in some way to reduce that instability or at least create a form of stability that will protect the various interests that China has in Burma, Myanmar.
Right, and of course we're talking about quite a few reports, particularly in the last few days, have stepped up in regards to China establishing a joint security company with the military in Myanmar and perhaps putting boots on ground. We're not sure what that means, but it's all about guarding the 770-kilometer oil and gas pipeline that runs straight through Rakhine State, and there's been a lot of fighting there over the last 6 months. It's been pretty awful. How doable is this? It must be fraught with a lot of problems and geopolitical issues.
Yes, there are certainly serious issues. And the issue at this point for China is, as you pointed out, they have this pipeline that they've built across the country going to various parts where there's active fighting going on. Now, early on after the coup, and it was understood that the various combatants in the struggle had agreed that they weren't going to bother the pipeline, they weren't going to cause any troubles with the operations of the pipeline. But in recent months, the Arakan Army, which is the main Rakhine rebel group, has been approaching Chakpyu, which is where the pipeline ends on the Indian Ocean side. Mm-hmm. And this has raised concern that if the Arakan Army takes control, will they allow the pipeline to continue to operate? Or will they require that new terms be struck with China regarding the revenue sharing, expenses, development, resources? China has an arrangement with the military junta. They'd like to keep that going. And so it looks like they're going to try to help the military junta stay in power, at least in Chakpyu and Sitwe, the capital of the province, so that the pipeline can continue to operate under the current terms. The question is how to make that possible.
Okay.
And the joint operations proposal poses a number of problems. First, how will the China provide military personnel in the area? But in addition, the Constitution the military themselves wrote and implemented in 2008-2009 doesn't allow for foreign troops to operate inside the country. So the junta would actually have to violate its own constitution, which of course they can. They wrote it, they can change it, in order to get the joint operations up and running. Then the next question becomes, what is going to be the mandate of that military unit if it's created? Are they just simply going to protect the pipeline and its operational facilities? And China basically step aside and let the Arakan Army and the military junta continue to fight over other parts of Rakhine State without any intervention by Chinese forces?
If Chinese boots land on ground, that would, one would imagine, free up the military to redeploy troops elsewhere in the Civil War. Mandalay is being laid siege to. They've lost out dramatically around the country. Could Chinese boots on ground have an impact on the Civil War? And by what most commentators are saying is that the anti-regime forces certainly have the upper hand at the moment. Could that equation change with the arrival of Chinese?
It would depend in part on the number of Chinese troops are involved. And if, as I speculated, it's really a limited force in order to protect the pipeline facilities in Chukchi,
right,
it's probably going to have a big impact on the military situation. But that may explain in part China's recent efforts to get the other two members of what had been the Brotherhood Alliance to agree to a temporary ceasefire with the military junta over on the other side of the country in Zhan State, where the China has been pressuring the MNDAA and the TNLA, the two other members of the alliance, to agree to a ceasefire. They have gotten that. It seems that the only way they could get that is by effectively detaining the leader of the MNDAA, Peng Daoren. Now, China claims it's medical conditions that he's getting treatment for, but most people believe they're holding him hostage to get the MNDAA to at least stop their offenses against the military junta in Shan State and, as you indicated, heading towards Mandalay.
Yeah, and of course, his capture, he was invited for peace talks, if I remember correctly, and then just went missing. And I know with the diplomat, Sebastian Stranger wrote the story that perhaps he'd been seized, and then the Chinese issued a press release saying, oh, no, he's gone to China for medical reasons.
Well, if you've been watching China for a number of years, he's getting medical treatment is often the official story.
Yep.
I think most observers are presuming that he's being detained for extended discussions about the goals and objectives of the MNDAA.
Right.
In Shan State and moving into the Mandalay area. But even if they get success on that initiative, you look around, and we've already talked briefly about how in Rakhine State, the Arakan Army continues to take more and more territory, more and more military bases. According to one report I saw this morning, the Arakan Army controls 12 of the 17 townships in Rakhine State. And in addition to the advances they're doing in Chukphu and around Sitwei, they're moving into new areas of An, Gui, Mongdaw, and Tong Up. So it seems quite reasonable to speculate that in 2025, the military junta will be effectively driven out of Rakhine State, and except for the possibility of Sitwei and Chukphu. Situation in Chin State is also quite bad. And then the Kachin Independence Army also this past couple of weeks has taken over several military bases, moving into major mining areas, controls the border areas, and so the conflict is just not, from the military's perspective, the conflict is not going well. They lack the trained manpower they have the equipment, they just lack the soldiers.
Is it possible that Myanmar could be divided by the oil and gas pipeline, in that there's 20-odd ethnic armed organizations and the People Defense Force units which are fighting the military, they're not always on board with each other. If there was a victory by the anti-regime forces, could the oil and gas pipeline divide them in terms of what they want out of Myanmar after the civil conflict?
The greatest dividing issue between the various resistance forces is that the most dominant one in the dominant ones in the military effort are very much ethnic based, and their primary focus is on liberating their ethnic people.
Right.
And so there isn't much pulling them together to reform some sort of federated republic. Everybody, or virtually all of the ethnic armed groups, say that is something they are open to, but there's no consensus at this point on what that federal republic would look like.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a good chance, actually I think the highest probability coming out of this, is that as each ethnic armed group obtains sufficient control of the territory that they consider their homeland, that they will form their own governments. And they're already in the process of setting those up.
Mm-hmm.
So that you will have an Arakan state, you'll have a Chin state, you'll have a Kachin state, a Karen state, a Kareni state. Shan is problematic because it's so diverse. It'll probably break up into several different states. And they'll form their governments. And then the serious discussion about can they unite under a new Burma, a new Myanmar, or will they stay autonomous states at some level? And there are groups like the National Unity Government that are pushing to maintain the unity of the various ethnic states that have historically formed Burma, but it's not clear to me that how that's going to be done. It's not going to be under the auspices of the NUG, as far as I can tell, nor under what the National Unity Government thinks is some sort of current accord on what that looks like. China can still work with these separate autonomous states if that's necessary.
Yep.
Because China tends to be quite pragmatic on such things. So if the junta falls, they'll go to Plan B and talk to the Arakan army about how to keep the pipeline working in the section that's in Rakhine State, and so to progressively across the country get the new governments to agree that the pipeline can continue to operate.
Where would China's rights and obligations start and begin? I know that's probably highly speculative, but Rakhine State has been singled out by the UN, which is saying that a famine is losing, a complete and absolute unprecedented breakdown of what exists there is on the cards by mid-year. I was just up over the border and we interviewed quite a few farmers. The crops have failed. There's been another two waves of refugees fleeing Myanmar again. One was out of Rakhine, and it's basically people fleeing conscription. The second wave, interesting, so we're told, I mean, a lot of this is anecdotal, was the moneyed people of Yangon have packed their bags and moved as well, setting up shop houses in places like Maesot. If there's a famine in Rakhine State, what would China's obligations be? I mean, you can't just come in and say, we're going to look after this 2-kilometer-wide corridor that stretches right across the country, and if people are literally starving to death, just ignore them.
One would hope that China would be supportive of humanitarian assistance being delivered in some way, shape, or form. But this has proven so far to be a serious problem. One, because the military junta itself has been resistant to international efforts to distribute humanitarian assistance in conflict areas, and basically all of Rakhine State's conflict area. but so too closer at hand neighbors such as India, have also been resistant to the provision of humanitarian assistance across the border. So it does look like the people in Rakhine State, both the Arakan and the hundreds of thousands of Rohingya that still are in the area, may be looking at a rather dire 2025, unless some sort of new method of delivering humanitarian assistance is made possible.
Right, and this comes back to ASEAN, the idea of boots on ground by the Chinese in an ASEAN country, one would think would probably annoy quite a few of the members, but ASEAN has proved itself unfit for purpose on the Myanmar issue and the crisis, the ongoing tragedy. Where is that going to leave ASEAN? And just a quick point out that Cambodia has replaced its foreign minister, brought back Praksakorn, who's an old stager and a Chinese favourite, likewise in Laos, and both those countries are really the only two nations that China can rely on in ASEAN, and one would think they are lobbying for support. Hun Sen just went to China and he is back saying that Xi Jinping is backing some big projects, infrastructure projects here in Cambodia. Where does this leave ASEAN? I mean, the divisions in ASEAN are pretty well known now, and one would imagine they're not going to get any better when it comes to Myanmar and China.
Indeed, the divisions in ASEAN are pretty extensive, and there are countries, the two that you mentioned, Cambodia and Laos, that are considered generally quite China-friendly. There are others who sometimes are and sometimes aren't. In the case of the situation in Burma, Myanmar, you've got a few countries, Malaysia, Indonesia, that have pushed for more action. But the problem that they're running into right now is that they're still thinking that, the previous six-point plan was operational, and it's just not working out. And until ASEAN's willing to offer an alternative, it's marginalized itself in terms of its ability to affect what's going on.
It is an enormous problem for ASEAN. One would imagine the Philippines, which is well back in bed with the West, would be totally rattled by this, and given what's happening in the South China Sea. Indonesia, which is the powerhouse, has a new president in Prabowo, and we really don't know which way he's going to go. And then, of course, where you are in the United States, Donald Trump is about to make his return, and we've had a lot of discussions about this and Donald Trump's nature, in that he likes transactional arrangements with individual countries. He doesn't really like to work with groups like ASEAN. Where will that leave Myanmar and the 10 nations of ASEAN, in that one would imagine he's not going to be particularly interested in Southeast Asian countries, particularly the likes of Cambodia and Laos. But if China puts boots on ground in Myanmar, that must be sure to grab his attention.
Well, certainly if that were to happen, and I don't know how likely that is at this point.
Right.
There's this proposal. It's been floated around for a while, but so far hasn't been implemented. I mean, most observers here are hoping the best Trump 2 will present for Myanmar specifically is sort of benign neglect.
Mm-hmm.
That the policies that have been in place going back to the Obama administration, to a certain extent, continued during Trump 1 and have continued on during Biden's term as president, will just continue to be in place simply because the White House, his security advisors, his Secretary of State, whomever that ends up being, aren't going to be particularly interested in what's going on in Myanmar or Burma. It's not going to be an interest of theirs. The problem they have is, if you look at State Department and the personnel who are still there, you don't have many experienced Burma hands or Myanmar hands that are still in the State Department. There's a few who are learning or gaining experiences, but they don't have the bench that they had before. People who are currently available presumably are going to leave, and because they're political appointees.
Right.
And if Trump won, if what occurred during the first term of the Trump presidency, there's not a reason to be overly optimistic about what's going to happen. You remember Secretary of State Tillerson quickly announced in 2017 that the attacks on the Rohingya constituted ethnic cleansing, which has no legal meaning. It sounds good, but by U.S. law, it doesn't require anything to be done. A subsequent investigation was financed by the State Department. UN Ambassador Nikki Haley spoke about it extensively, and it clearly showed that really horrific things had occurred. But when push came to shove, Secretary Pompeo effectively buried that report and took no action on it. It wasn't until the Biden administration came about that Secretary of State Blinken announced that indeed the United States considers it genocide and started taking real action about those atrocities.
Yep.
So if that's an indication of the type of people who will be leading on Burma-Myanmar issues for Trump too, it's not particularly helpful for the people of Myanmar. They are going to be more of a borderline sideline issue than they have been for the last 4 years.
Do you think human trafficking, is that likely to be an issue with the Trump administration, given that it's, I know groups like the United States Institute for Peace, they've cited Cambodia, Laos, and Myanmar as the potential great threat to global security through the scam compounds and human trafficking operations, which are allegedly run by Chinese criminal syndicates. Beijing has made it known it wants to stamp out the scourge as much as anybody else. Over the last year or two, there seems to have been a greater push to get Congress and the and American politicians to stand up and take notice. It seemed to be getting some traction because Americans are victims of these scam compounds as much as anywhere else. Is that likely to kind of pick up, or is that another issue that might just be swept aside?
It could potentially be picked up, but I would anticipate it's probably going to come more from the congressional side than directly from the Trump administration. But whether that's going to result in resources being dedicated specifically to try to resolve the situation in Myanmar, it would be nice, but I don't anticipate it. I mean, one other little detail is that prior to a statement on ethnic cleansing, Rex Tillerson specifically excluded Myanmar from sanctions having to do with the usage of child soldiers.
Right.
So, again, it's a new Trump administration, a different Secretary of State, maybe with a different attitude on such matters. But it seemed under Trump 1, child soldiers trafficking in people wasn't a great concern.
Why did they specifically exclude that issue, child soldiers?
I would have to look back to see what rationale Secretary Tillerson gave at the time.
Yep.
My recollection, which may not be perfect, is that the feeling was that sort of a continuation of the late Obama administration continuing to have sanctions on Myanmar was counterproductive to U.S. policy objectives to promote the gradual transition towards democracy that they thought was underway.
Right.
So, remember, 2017, you have Aung San Suu Kyi, the NLD, controlling the civilian half of the government. It may have been a feeling of, we don't want to put unnecessary complications in bilateral relations when we're trying to help her implement greater democratic reforms.
Right, okay. In terms of the war to date since last time we spoke, which I guess must have been more than 6 months ago, the NUG have been rattling the cages in the United States for funding and support. Have they gained any traction on those sorts of issues in your part of the world?
Opinions vary on that. There are some people that feel like they're slowly getting greater support. But at this point, I don't see a groundswell of interest in giving them formal recognition as the legitimate government in exile.
Mm-hmm.
And inside agencies that are working, trying to continue to support political changes and the resistance effort in the country, I continue to hear frustration with how the NUG operates.
Right.
So I would think what you're going to probably see in Trump 2, something very similar to what you're seeing in the Biden administration, which is regular meetings with representatives of the NUG, but also meetings with other representative groups, including some of the ethnic armed groups in the country, and then trying to find in what ways the U.S. government can foster the type of political changes that U.S. policy officially supports, which is the restoration of the civilian democracy that respects human rights.
Okay. Do you think that's possible or probable perhaps in 2025?
If you mean a unified Burma, I doubt that will happen.
Mm-hmm.
My very foggy crystal ball for 2025
indeed, yeah.
Sees that you will see one by one the ethnic armed groups and the ethnic states announce that they have liberated their people, and that they are forming a transitional government, and that once they have that up and operational, they will then turn to the issue of trying to reunify the country if agreeable terms can be reached with the other newly established governments.
2025, it would appear that the Chinese may put boots on ground, but that may not have a major impact on the military equation in Myanmar, so the military is going to continue to struggle, and perhaps by the end of 2025 we might have a much clearer picture of what a future Myanmar might look like.
In terms of a Chinese presence, I think their focus, what limited troops are deployed, will be focused on Chinese resources, but I wouldn't anticipate China in any way trying to save the military junta if it looks like it's on the verge of collapse.
Right.
I would anticipate they would shift to a plan B where they use their already existent ties with the ethnic armed groups to try to negotiate new arrangements with the victors or in the different parts of the country.
Okay. Michael Martin, again, thank you very much. It's been a fascinating chat. Myanmar, I think, is going to be a hell of a story in 2025. The perennial issue is whether or not the rest of the world sits up and takes any notice.
Well, 2025 is going to be an interesting year, not just in Myanmar, not just in the United States, but in many parts of the world. So we'll talk again sometime soon, I hope.
I do hope so. That is the plan. Michael Martin, thank you very much.
All right. Talk to you later, Luke.
Okay. Thanks, Mike. Cheers.